Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There were three ravens sat on a tree. Down a down, hey, down a down. They were as black as they might be with a down. One of them said to his mate, "Where shall we our breakfast take? With a down, derry, 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 down, down."
Hello and welcome to the third listener episode of the Three Ravens podcast.
Huzzah!
I'm Eleanor Conlon and I'm holding out my hands so that carrier pigeons bringing stories and anecdotes from far-flung corners can alight. And my co-host Martin Vaux is fluffing their feathers and giving them delicious pigeon treats.
Hello. So we're really thrilled to be able to release our third listener episode. And it's all thanks to you, the Three Ravens community.
Yes, we are so glad that you've written to us to share your local stories and folky tidbits. We really enjoyed receiving these and we hope that you'll enjoy sharing them too.
Yep. Now, they were all sent to us either via email to threeravenspodcast@gmail.com or shared on our social media feeds. So if you have a favourite folktale or piece of local lore that you'd like to hear on a future listener episode, please do send them on through to that same address, threeravenspodcast@gmail.com, or just message us on the socials.
Yep. Or you can share them on social media via facebook.com/threeravenspodcast, Instagram @threeravenspodcast, or X @threeravenspod. We also have our Three Ravens podcast group, where we know there have been some amazing things shared listener to listener, as it were. But if we included all of those, we'd probably have an entire series on our hands.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're on a break between series at the moment, but if you've been enjoying the podcast and would like to receive bonus content, including exclusive episodes, the monthly Three Ravens newsletter with magic spells, tarot spreads, folk traditions, text versions of the stories, and of course, all of our episodes completely ad-free, please consider subscribing to our Patreon at patreon.com/threeravenspodcast.
We've also been having a lovely time reading all of the incredible folky flash fiction stories which you sent to us. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be recording some of our favourites for release next week.
Now, on to our stories for today, all of which have been sent since our previous listener episode, including a couple which just missed inclusion in the last one, so they've been waiting for a little while. We've also got a lovely poem to share and a couple of fun facts.
Let's do it!
Okay, so our first story is from Gemma, and relates to her hometown of Rothwell in West Yorkshire. Close to the church is a time-ravaged pillar of stone, she says, which we all know as Rothwell Castle, although the historical records state it was actually just a hunting lodge. The castle and the church are linked by a pretty unique historical artifact called John of Gaunt's coat. Gemma saw it last year on a tour of the church during the annual beer festival held in the graveyard, which sounds like a great thing to do.
Yes.
And she also sent us an excellent picture. Now, at some point in late 1398, heartsick over his nephew Richard's banishment of his son Henry, John of Gaunt travelled north to Yorkshire and stayed at this hunting lodge in Rothwell. During this time, he was said to have killed the last wild boar in England, which is quite sad, actually, when you think about it.
It is.
Luckily, we've got new wild boars.
Yes, new wild boars have flourished.
Yeah,
luckily.
Although I think they're actually French wild boar that we have now.
Well, you know, Norman Conquest, French wild boar.
Yeah.
Go figure.
They could be Italian. Maybe they're both Italian and French and they kind of have boary disputes because they can't communicate clearly. Anyway, hopefully they all learn English in time. Anyway, after John's death in early February 1399, Richard prevented Henry from inheriting John's lands automatically, given they were at odds with each other. Henry returned to England at the head of an army to reclaim his rightful inheritance, but the support he received caused him to set his eyes higher and claim the English throne. Now, Richard II was overthrown by his cousin, Henry IV, in September 1399, and died mysteriously in Pomfret Castle. Now, this is spelt Pontefract, P-O-N-T-E-F-R-A-C-T, but because it's Yorkshire, it's said funny. And that happened in February 1400. This was barely a year after John of Gaunt passed away without the comfort of seeing his beloved exiled son one last time. But maybe John had the last laugh after all. It was interesting to read the boar itself was a popular royal symbol used to signify the strength of the king, and the last boar in England had recently met its match on Rothwell's Stye Bank. A tour guide in the church told Gemma that John of Gaunt's coat, aka the Rothwell Jack, is actually believed to be part of a Tudor soldier's armour. The only other well-preserved example of one of these is found in the Tower of London. They wrote to the church saying that the two pieces should be kept together. Rothwell's response was, "We look forward to receiving the other artifacts."
That's brilliant. I feel like siding with the church on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, why should the Tower of London have both?
No, quite right.
It's interesting, though, that the coat has become associated with John of Gaunt, despite dating from slightly later. The Tudors actually had a bit of a thing for John of Gaunt. He was considered to be quite the hero. I mean, he pops up in Shakespeare and he's got various legends attached to him.
Yeah.
Don't know if any of them have any basis in truth.
It's interesting. It's the first time we've talked about John of Gaunt. So thank you very much. Much, Gemma. Fascinating.
And I'm sure that John of Gaunt may pop up again.
Yes.
Jack or no Jack.
Jack or no Jack.
Now, our next story is from Kiki, who wrote to us from the United States, and quite timely for the season, actually, as it relates to May Day customs and her own youthful experiences.
Okay.
So Kiki was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, which caught my attention immediately, as it's one of the few places in the US I have visited myself.
Ooh.
I didn't meet Kiki, unfortunately, but it was some years ago. Kiki attended a private school founded in 1859 by William Greenleaf Eliot, the paternal grandfather of the poet T.S. Eliot, who we visited the other day when we went to East Coker. And the school has its own May Day tradition, which Kiki took part in, as did her mother and grandmother before her. So every year in the spring, girls from grades 4, 8, 11 and 12 take part in a May Day celebration at an outdoor theatre space called Lily's Field that's used solely for this purpose. Each grade of girls performs their own dance, although the grade 11 girls perform the same dance every year wearing the same costumes. It's known as the Daisy Chain Dance because they hold, you guessed it, a daisy chain, after which they present sprigs of ivy to the grade 12 girls, who are the stars of the celebration and whose dance is the culmination of the performance. Wearing white, the senior girls gather around a tall maypole festooned with brightly coloured ribbons. There's a different colour palette and theme for every year, she said, where they proceed to literally weave the maypole.
Oh, that's nice.
I do love a maypole dance.
Yeah.
They can be so beautiful, can't they? Well, Kiki says that when she was a senior, they rehearsed the dance for 3 months prior to the celebration. When we went to our local maypole dance, I will not name any names to protect the very guilty. I think they would have benefited from those 3 months.
They basically just called up volunteers in the moment and nobody knew what they were doing.
Yeah, maypole dancing isn't a voluntary activity. It must be rehearsed. Anyway, once the ribbons had been woven down to the ground, the May Queen was announced, crowned with a flower crown and given an enormous bouquet, signalling the end of the performance. And the senior girls vote among themselves on who the May Queen would be. But Kiki said the white dresses that she and her friends wore were all actually wedding dresses. Whoa. That they bought for the dual purpose of May Day and graduation, as girls must wear white during graduation at this school. The original idea may have been that the dress would serve a triple purpose for the young woman in question, to be worn at May Day, at graduation, and at her wedding. But that may have been hearsay.
Yeah.
Although I do quite like that idea. You know, a lot of wedding dresses just get put away in the cupboard, and that's really getting cost per wear.
That's true. Definitely, yeah.
Well, Kiki gamely participated as an eighth grader, as a junior, and as a senior, and never questioned how odd this celebration was. See, to us, this doesn't sound odd, but apparently in America, one doesn't really encounter any kind of traditional May Day celebration. So no. There, it's strange.
Yeah, it is strange and wonderful and brilliant. I mean, I don't know if Kiki has still got her wedding dress from when she did this.
I think she's moved away now, but she did send us a link to last year's celebration and it seems very similar to the ones that she took part in nearly 20 years ago.
Wow, it's still going on today.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, well, it's interesting to think that this is an unusual thing in the United States because, like you say, happens here every year to a certain extent.
Oh, yeah, we've got all sorts of skipping around in strange dresses, presenting people with flowers on May Day. You know, it's quite normal.
Yeah, it's quite chaotic as well in this country in particular. American listeners from anywhere except Missouri, have you ever taken part in a May Day celebration or is this an isolated incident?
Get in touch and let us know. We must know.
We must know.
The science of folklore. Now, we've heard from the lovely Sam and her family more than once and she sent us another appropriately seasonal story as we've just had Good Friday. At 75 Devon's Road, Bromley by Bow, there was a pub called The Widow's Son, which is also known by locals as the Bun House.
Excellent name.
Built in the early 19th century, it was first a cottage where a widow and her only son lived. The pub now celebrates the Easter holidays and particularly Good Friday with a tradition called Widow's Buns.
Okay, this is excellent. Is it what I think it is?
Probably not. I don't know. I'm going to tell you what it is and then you can tell me if it was what you were thinking.
All right, excellent.
So, Widow's Buns. Mm-hmm. The legend goes that the widow's only son had left to go to sea, joining the Navy in the Napoleonic Wars. He wrote to his mother saying that he would be returning home at Easter and requested that a hot cross bun would be waiting for him on his return.
Yeah, this isn't what I thought the story was going to go like.
Sadly, he never did return.
Oh, no!
But his mother kept a fresh hot cross bun for him every Good Friday for all of her life. And after her death, they found a huge net of hot cross buns in her cottage. But very strangely, none of them had rotted.
Holy hot cross buns.
Holy hot cross buns. But the tradition continued after the cottage became a pub, with a sailor from the Navy nailing a new hot cross bun in a net above the bar each Good Friday ever since.
What?
Apparently, while this was happening, the ghost of the widow could also be seen appearing to watch the sailor bring in the new hot cross bun every year in a corner of the bar area, which apparently used to be her old kitchen in the cottage.
Fascinating.
The pub sadly closed in 2015, but a nearby pub called the Queen's Head in Limehouse has carried on the tradition.
And has the ghost moved to the new pub?
I'm not sure, but let's hope that she has to see the proper disposal of the ceremonial bun.
Okay, we've got more to come and we'll be back with original poetry and folky delights hailing from Colorado and West Yorkshire right after this.
Life is full of awesome what ifs and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Okay, the next contribution to our listener episode is from Dominic, who also did one of our beautiful winter card designs. Check the shop, the cards are still for sale. After enjoying our bestiary episode on Selkies, Dominic was inspired to share a poem he wrote inspired by a Selkie and a boto, the pink dolphins known in Amazonian folklore for turning into humans.
I hadn't actually heard of boto dolphins before Dominic sent us his poem, so I had to look them up. I can confirm they are extremely pink. And I can definitely see how the sight of one rolling around in the waves might be mistaken for a human, albeit a rather sunburnt human.
Okay, here's Dominic's poem. Selkie black seal stood up on the shore and brushed himself down with his hand. And there at his side stood boto pink dolphin, no longer a fish, but a man. Boto, my friend, said Selkie black seal, can you feel the spring tide in the air? We'll walk among men till the tide ebbs again, so let's dance and let's sing at the fair. We're away, away, away from the ocean, sang Selkie and Boto alone. Let the girls wipe their eyes, let the men raise their glasses. We're away, but soon we'll be home. And Selkie Black Seal did have the first dance with Isla, the queen of those parts. They laughed as they turned, and Boto Pink Dolphin sang a song to melt human hearts. I'm away, away, away from the ocean, sang Boto Pink Dolphin alone. And the girls wiped their eyes and the men raised their glasses. I'm away, but soon I'll be home. And the dances they danced went on until morning, and the ebb tide was pulling away. So Selkie Black Seal and Boto Pink Dolphin walked back as the dawn broke the day. We're away, away, away to the ocean, sang Selkie and Boto alone. And the girls wiped their eyes, and the men raised their glasses. You're away, but soon you'll be home. Now old tales tell of two handsome strangers who once won the hearts of the fair. And their children who swim like seals and the dolphins and sing to remember the pair. We're away, away, away from the ocean, like Selkie and Boto alone. And the girls wipe their eyes, and the men raise their glasses. We're away, but soon we'll be home.
Oh, that was lovely. I think it would make a great folk song.
Yeah, it's
I could
very
always
much
hear the
song,
music in my head.
Yeah.
I think Dominic might have said he did try and put it to music. I'm not sure if he's recorded it.
Well, if you have Dominic,
yes,
you should share it.
You know
with
where
us.
To share it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I like the idea of these mythical friends swimming along in the ocean to meet, perhaps for holidays.
I'm now imagining a sort of club 18 to 30 for folkloric creatures.
It could be the basis of a horror story for you in the future, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. We also heard from Alison, who was inspired to share some lovely memories with us after listening to our Dying Arts episode on corn dollies. Alison also currently lives in the United States in Denver, Colorado, although she spent much of her childhood in Nidderdale in North Yorkshire. She also recalls being an attendant to the May Queen in the Glasshouses Village May Day celebrations. I don't know if that's the correct pronunciation of that village. It looks too normal for Yorkshire. I'm going to go for it and somebody can correct me.
Yep, sure.
But her family moved back to the US before she had a chance to participate in a maypole dance.
Oh, she was denied.
And she didn't move to Missouri, so she couldn't have participated in one there. So poor Alison was denied. But while she was in high school in Colorado, one of the graduation requirements was community service. So she volunteered at the Museum of Miniatures, Dolls and Toys in Denver. The house was built around 1900, but Alison pointed out that the furthest back a historic house could have been built in Colorado was the 1850s.
Yeah, sure.
So it was fairly old by those standards. Mm-hmm. This particular house is called the Pierce McAllister Cottage, and its various rooms are styled to represent different time periods. One of Alison's jobs was to give tours to preschool groups and then teach them to make very simple corn dollies. This was entirely in the context of Colorado settlers growing corn and not having much money or time to devote to toys for their children.
Mm.
So corn dollies were one of the ways children could have made toys for themselves. Alison said that in the early 1990s, they weren't doing a great deal of reflection on the settled land, so she didn't know if the tradition came from the white settlers or if there were any older Indigenous ties to the corn dolly making tradition.
Now that's interesting in the light of the research you did about corn dolly making in England, which seems to have been much more based in ritual rather than in making toys for children.
Yeah, it's very different, isn't it? And I do wonder if those are more the corn husk style dolls rather than the plaited corn. I'm not sure. Alison didn't tell us. So, Alison, if you're listening, please do tell us. And if you've got a picture, we'd love that.
Our last story is courtesy of Emily, who wrote in after listening to our Wiltshire episode and the stories of moon raking in the Devizes Pond. Emily hails from Slawit in West Yorkshire. That's spelt S-L-A-I-T-H-W-A-I-T-E. So it looks like Slaithwaite.
You see where I was sceptical about glasshouses.
yeah, I get it.
It's probably pronounced like glasses or something.
Yeah, for sure.
That sounds really accurate.
Now, they have a similar legend about moon raking in Slawit. Now, Slawit is in a steep valley to the west of Huddersfield called the Colne Valley. If you ever saw the old television programme Last of the Summer Wine, that's very much the vibe. Emily says that each village along the valley has its own legend of local silliness and an associated festival, which is quite interesting.
Yes.
Now, the moon raking legend goes that the locals were smuggling bootleg booze along the canal, which runs through the centre of the village. When the customs and excise men came along, they quickly dumped the booze into the canal and planned to come back under the cover of darkness to retrieve it. Unbeknownst to them, the customs men were waiting for them when they came back with their rakes to pull the booze back out and pounced on them, asking what they were up to. The local men, thinking on their feet, looked down at the reflection of the full moon in the canal and said, "Hey, lads, can thee not see? The moon's fallen into water and we're raking her out." So the customs men had a good laugh at the local stupidity and went on their way, leaving the locals to rake out their booze. Nowadays, Slawit holds the village moonraking festival once every 2 years.
Excellent.
On odd-numbered years. Appropriate, I think, odd-numbered. Mm-hmm. And that happens during the February half-term holidays. Local families spend the week making willow and paper lanterns to a specific theme. So last year's theme was Under the Sea. And there is storytelling, theatre and music workshops. Then on the Saturday, a huge moon-shaped lantern is raked out of the canal by the moon maidens and gnomes.
Moon maidens and gnomes?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
And that happens with the assistance of a crane.
So goodness. They bring a crane. The canal is a bit dangerous without the crane.
It's kind of amazing, the levels of kind of heavy engineering that's gone into this festival. And then it's paraded around the town with all of the kids and their lanterns and various bands following along behind. Then at the end, there's a fireworks display.
Sounds amazing.
What's not to like about this? And Emily also told us a great story about last year's moonraking festival when some tourists walked by and witnessed this and asked if it was normal. To which Emily's husband told them it happened every weekend.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Love it.
I must say, I wish we had a similarly eccentric festival in our village.
Yeah, we just set stuff on fire here, don't we?
Yeah, but only once a year. I feel like we could be doing more.
Yeah, okay.
and weirder.
Well, let's start some rumours. Let's discover, in inverted commas, some ancient traditions. Alternatively, we could just move to West Yorkshire, because Emily also mentioned the Cuckoo Festival in the neighbouring village of Marsden every spring and the Lanfit Lead Boilers Festival in the summer.
I am immediately going to go and look up this Lead Boilers Festival and what it involves, as it sounds fascinating it does. I don't know what that is.
Well, I'm going to start daydreaming about a tour of the Colne Valley, ideally when we can experience as many of these excellent local customs as possible.
Yes, perhaps we could line them up for our arrival. Wouldn't that be amazing? I'd love to.
Well, if they happen every weekend, it's fine.
Absolutely. Well, according to Emily's husband. Well, we spoke about Hapsburgh Lighthouse in our recent Norfolk episode, and our listener Corbred sent us a rather gruesome detail about its local area.
Yes. So Corbred wrote to us about the nearby Side Strand Church, which was moved and rebuilt in the 1800s to prevent it falling into the sea. Now, this kind of moving of churches and historic important buildings is something that we've encountered a few times. Mm-hmm. You know, cathedrals, sometimes entire cathedrals would be moved.
Sometimes with the aid of a phantom pig.
Yes, also sometimes, yeah, a ghost pig would come and help. But, but nonetheless, this particular church, Side Strand Church, was moved. But they couldn't move the graveyard.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. So, and this is a bit like Dunwich, where similar things were reported to happen at Dunwich, where, of course, the coast has moved inland as well. But the inevitability of the coastal erosion meant that the contents of the graveyard, over time, just started to spill out onto the beaches below the cliffs.
Oh, lends a whole new dimension to morning dog walks, I'd imagine.
Yeah, of course.
Dear.
Well, at least you got a very good chance of finding a bone, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Lots of happy good
boys. Lots of happy dogs.
They're always excited to go on that particular part of the walk.
Mum, I found an ancient bone.
Oh, that's Uncle Reginald.
Now, we'll leave you with this excellent word sent to us by a lovely listener, Alexandra, who says she often thinks of it when Martin reacts to something spooky that I've written.
Yeah.
And the word is horripilation, which is defined as the erection of hairs on the skin due to cold, fear, or excitement.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope we can all experience more horripilation soon.
Yes, and describe it as such when you're experiencing it.
Indeed, but not least because we're looking forward to releasing some of our favourite entries for our Folky Flash fiction competition next Monday.
Yes, we will also be launching our fourth series very soon, mm-hmm. where we'll be going on our second lap around England's 39 historic counties, poking into all those dark corners we didn't quite snuffle into last time, and telling a plethora of new tales.
Until then, thank you so, so much to Gemma, Kiki, Sam, Dominic, Alison, Emily, Corbred and Alexandra for sharing your tales, thoughts, poetry and local legends. And if you too have a quirky tale or folky anecdote you'd like to be featured on our next listener episode, please do send it in to 3ravenspodcast@gmail.com. We always love hearing from you, so don't be shy.
As always, please do check out our website at 3ravenspodcast.com for our archive of all past episodes, our episode blogs with interesting pictures and facts from all the counties we've visited so far, and of course to visit our shop for lots of lovely Three Ravens merchandise.
Until then, while our stories have gone that way, we'll go this way.
And remember, don't whistle till you're out of the woods. Our theme song is the traditional folk ballad Three Ravens, performed by Eleanor Conlon and Ben Harbour. And our logo is by Ollie James Dare.
The Three Ravens podcast is a Rust and Stardust production, produced by me, Martin Vaughs. Thanks for listening.
God send every gentleman such hounds, such hawks, and such leman with a down derry-derry.